The Message, Feed My Sheep, by President Boyd K. Packer, Acting President of the Quorum of the Twelve Apostles. Imagine that our bishop has appointed you and me to plan a picnic for all of the ward members. It is to be the finest social in the history of the ward, and we are to spare no expense. We reserve a beautiful picnic ground in the country. We have it all to ourselves. No outsiders will interfere with us. The arrangements go very well, and when the day comes, the weather is perfect. All is beautifully ready. The tables are in one long row. We even have tablecloths and china. You have never seen such a feast. The Relief Society and young women have outdone themselves. The tables are laden with every kind of delicious food. Grapes, cantaloupes, watermelon, corn on the cob, fried chicken, hamburgers, cakes, pies. You get the picture? We are seated, and the bishop calls upon the patriarch to bless the food. Every hungry youngster secretly hopes it will be a short prayer. Then, just at that moment, there is an interruption. A noisy old car jerks into the picnic grounds and sputters to a stop close to us. We are upset. Didn't they see the reserved signs? A worried-looking man lifts the hood. A spout of steam comes out. One of our brethren, a mechanic, says, "That car isn't going anywhere until it is fixed." Several children spill from the car. They are ragged, dirty, and noisy. And then an anxious mother, leaving the car, takes a box to that extra table nearby. It is mealtime. Their children are hungry. She puts a few leftovers on the table. Then she nervously moves them about, trying to make it look like a meal for her brood, but there is not enough. We wait impatiently for them to quiet down so we can have the blessing and enjoy our feast. Then one of their little girls spies our table. She pulls her runny-nosed little brother over to us and pushes her head between you and me. We cringe aside because they are very dirty. Then the little girl says, "Look at that. I wonder what that tastes like." Everyone is waiting. Why did they arrive just at that moment? Such an inconvenient time. Why must we interrupt what we are doing to bother with outsiders? Why couldn't they have stopped somewhere else? They are not clean. They are not like us. They just don't fit in. Three choices. Since the bishop has put us in charge, he expects us to handle these intruders. What should we do? Of course, this is only a parable. If it really happened, my young friends, what would you do? I will give you three choices. First, you must insist the intruders keep their children quiet while we have the blessing. Thereafter, we ignore them. After all, we reserved the place. I doubt that you would do that. Could you choke down a feast before hungry children? Surely we are better than that. That is not the answer. The next choice, there is an extra table. And we do have too much of some things. We could take a little of this and a little of that and lure the little children back to their own table. Then we could enjoy our feast without interruption. After all, we earned what we have. Did we not obtain it by our own industry, as the Book of Mormon says? See Alma chapter 4, verse 6. I hope you would not do that. There is a better answer. You already know what it is. We should go to them and invite them to come and join us. You could slide that way, and I could slide this way, and the little girl could sit between us. We could all fit in somewhere to share our feast. Afterward, we would fix their car and provide something for their journey. Could there be more pure enjoyment than seeing how much we could get those hungry children to eat? Could there be more satisfaction than to interrupt our festivities to help our mechanic fix their car? Is that what you would do? Surely it is what you should do. But forgive me if I have a little doubt. Let me explain. Called to be missionaries, we as members of the church have the fullness of the gospel. Every conceivable manner of spiritual nourishment is ours. Every part of the spiritual menu is included. It provides an unending supply of spiritual strength. Like the widow's cruse of oil, it is replenished as we use it and shall never fail. See 1 Kings chapter 17, verses 8 through 16. And yet, there are people across the world and about us, our neighbors, our friends, some in our own families, who, spiritually speaking, are undernourished. Some of them are starving to death. If we keep all this to ourselves, it is not unlike feasting before those who are hungry. We are to go to them and invite them to join us. We are to be missionaries. It does not matter if it interrupts your schooling or delays your career or your marriage or basketball. Unless you have a serious health problem, every Latter-day Saint young man should answer the call to serve a mission. Even mistakes and transgressions must not stand in the way. You should make yourself worthy to receive a call. The early apostles at first did not know the gospel was for everyone, for the Gentiles. Then Peter had a vision. He saw a vessel full of all kinds of creatures and was commanded to kill and to eat. But he refused, saying they were common and unclean. Then the voice said, "What God hath cleansed, that call not thou common." Acts chapter 10, verse 15. That vision and the experience they had immediately following convinced them of their duty. Thus began the great missionary work of all Christianity. Almost any returned missionary will have a question. If they are starving spiritually, why do they not accept what we have? Why do they slam the door on us and turn us away? One of my sons was serving in Australia and was thrown off a porch by a man who rejected his message. My son is big enough and strong enough that he had to be somewhat agreeable to what was happening, or the man never could have done it. Be patient if some will not eat when first invited. Remember, all who are spiritually hungry will not accept the gospel. Do you remember how reluctant you are to try any new food? Only after your mother urges you will you take a little tiny portion on the tip of a spoon to taste it to see if you like it first. Undernourished children must be carefully fed. So it is with the spiritually underfed. Some are so weakened by mischief and sin that to begin with they reject the rich food we offer. They must be fed carefully and gently. Some are so near spiritual death that they must be spoon-fed on the broth of fellowship or nourished carefully on activities and programs. So the scriptures say they must have milk before meat. See 1 Corinthians chapter 3, verse 2, Doctrine and Covenants, section 19, verse 22. But we must take care lest the only nourishment they receive thereafter is that broth. But feed them we must. We are commanded to preach the gospel to every nation, kindred, tongue, and people. That message, my young friends, appears more than 80 times in the scriptures. Feeding the hungry. I did not serve a regular mission until my wife and I were called to preside in New England. When I was of missionary age, young men could not be called to the mission field. It was World War II, and I spent 4 years in the military. But I did do missionary work. We did share the gospel. It was my privilege to baptize one of the first two Japanese to join the church after the mission had been closed 22 years earlier. Brother Elliot Richards baptized Tetsui Saito. I baptized his wife Chio, and the work in Japan was reopened. We baptized them in a swimming pool amid the rubble of a university that had been destroyed by bombs. Shortly thereafter, I boarded a train in Osaka for Yokohama and a ship that would take me home. Brother and Sister Saito came to the station to say goodbye. Many tears were shed as we bade one another farewell. It was a very chilly night. The railroad station, what there was left of it, was very cold. Starving children were sleeping in the corners. That was a common sight in Japan in those days. The fortunate ones had a newspaper or a few old rags to fend off the cold. On that train, I slept restlessly. The berths were too short anyway. In the bleak, chilly hours of the dawn, the train stopped at a station along the way. I heard a tapping on the window and raised the blind. There on the platform stood a little boy, tapping on the window with a tin can. I knew he was an orphan and a beggar. The tin can was the symbol of their suffering. Sometimes they carried a spoon as well, as if to say, "I'm hungry, feed me." He might have been 6 or 7 years old. His little body was thin with starvation. He had on a thin, ragged shirt-like kimono, nothing else. His head was shingled with scabs. His one jaw was swollen, perhaps from an abscess tooth. Around his head he had tied a filthy rag with a knot on top of his head. A pathetic gesture of treatment. When I saw him, and he saw that I was awake, he waved his can. He was begging. In pity, I thought, how can I help him? Then I remembered. I had money. Japanese money. I quickly groped for my clothing and found some yen notes in my pocket. I tried to open the window, but it was stuck. I slipped on my trousers and hurried to the end of the car. He stood outside expectantly. As I pushed at the resistant door, the train pulled away from the station. Through the dirty windows I could see him, holding that rusty tin can, with the dirty rag around his swollen jaw. There I stood, an officer from a conquering army, heading home to a family and a future. There I stood, half-dressed, clutching some money which he had seen but which I could not get to him. I wanted to help him, but I couldn't. The only comfort I draw is that I did want to help him. That was years ago, but I can see him as clearly as if it were yesterday. Perhaps I was scarred by that experience. If so, it is a battle scar, a worthy one, for which I bear no shame. It reminds me of my duty. I can hear the voice of the Lord saying to each of us, just as he said to Peter, "Feed my lambs, feed my sheep, feed my sheep." John chapter 21, verses 15 through 17. I have unbounded confidence and faith in you. You are the warriors of the restoration, and in this spiritual battle, you are to relieve the spiritual hunger and feed the sheep. It is your duty. We have the fullness of the everlasting gospel. We have the obligation to share it with those who do not have it. God grant that we will honor that commission from the Lord and prepare ourselves and answer the call. From an April 1984 General Conference Address. End of article, The Message, Feed My Sheep, by President Boyd K. Packer, Acting President of the Quorum of the 12 Apostles. Called Home by Laura Lee Bassett Levitt. I sat in the temple waiting to do baptisms for the dead, and I prayed. I was 20 years old, and I wanted to know, should I serve a full-time mission? I had been feeling that the answer was no, but I wanted to ask once and for all. Suddenly, I shivered all over, as if a bucket of cold water had been poured over me. No, was the impression I felt. No mission for me. Although I knew the expectation for young women was to go on missions is not the same as for young men, I was confused. Why did the Spirit encourage me not to serve? Wouldn't I be good at spreading the gospel? As some of my friends received mission calls, I sometimes wondered what my future would hold. My 21st birthday was approaching, and I couldn't help thinking, there's still time to be interviewed and submit my mission papers. I was studying in England when my parents called me. I could hear my mother crying as she told me the devastating news. She had been diagnosed with cancer. By the time I came home to the United States a month later, chemotherapy was making Mom weak. I started helping around the house, learning to manage chores and meals. I also spent hours talking to Mom, fearful that I might lose her. I learned that managing a household is complicated, time-consuming work, and I gained a new appreciation for Mom's efforts over the years. I barely managed to put decent dinners on the table. Fortunately, our ward members and others in the community gathered to help us. Mom's treatment went on, and meanwhile, our family grew closer. Mom told us stories about her youth, and we played lots of board games. We talked about the scriptures. My dad shared his fears with me, as well as his testimony. That summer, I learned eternal lessons. I knew my place for now was at home. My testimony grew as I felt Heavenly Father's love all summer long. I became better friends with the ward members I had known all my life. My family grew closer, comforted by the knowledge that our family ties would last beyond death. I thanked the Lord for answering my question about serving a mission, guiding me to be with my family. Editor's note: since her treatments, the author's mother has recovered her health. End of article. Called Home by Laura Lee Bassett Levitt.